This is Evolutionary Radio. This is your host, Trevor Kuritz. And as always, my co-host, Steve Smee, is joining me.
Good evening, guys. What's up?
We've got a really good guest for you guys. Joining us once again, coming back on Evolutionary Radio for a second time, IFBB Pro Chris Tuttle.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Glad to be back.
Second time's better than the first. So, Chris, the reason I want to get you back is that me and you were just emailing casually back and forth, and you mentioned something that for me was a little bit heartbreaking because your physique was one of my favorite physiques, is that you mentioned that you're done competing. So just for our listeners, what made you come to this decision? I mean, that can't have been an easy decision to make.
Well, you know, there's two main reasons. Really, it comes down to, I've been bodybuilding for a while now, man, and I'm 35 years old, and I want to start a family. We just bought a house, live in Berlin, Connecticut. And then there's the fact that, you know, my body is kind of feeling the aches and pains of everything I've done to it over the years of racing motocross and bodybuilding. And I don't want to walk around stiff, not being able to move by the time I'm 40 years old or not be able to catch a football with my kid. I mean, it's not like I was at the top of the game and making money directly from the sport, because most people do not, which a lot of people don't realize. You make it indirectly. So that's really the main decision. And I mean, if my body was 100% and I was training like I was back in 2013, 2014. Yeah, I probably would compete for a couple more years, but it's just different priority set, man. It's like, you know how it is when you're competing and you're in the beginning of it and how you viewed it and the effort you put in and how you felt about it. It's just like things are changing now. It's different as you get older, you know? And if you're, you know, in bodybuilding, you have to be incredibly selfish and 100% focused on you and only you day in and day out to really make a lot of ground. I mean, the years I made the most ground, I was doing that. The years that I wasn't and doing school and masters and doing all this other stuff and working on other people, it's like the shift inevitably comes away from what you need to do to improve. And I'm just not willing to do that anymore, you know?
What injuries exactly did you suffer from?
My first injury was a partially torn left long head tricep, which healed fine. The next catastrophic one was a left torn hamstring, which I live with every day today because it's kind of scar tissue. It's not function right. So when I load it under load and bring it to muscular failure, it's compromised. So I can never train to failure in hamstrings or go too heavy. It starts to pull and you can feel like, oh my God, it's a warning sign, possibly rip again. And then I tore my pec, and which is all healed now, finally, after a few years. It's all perfect, doesn't cause me any issues. I still can't really explode. But really the main issue is my knees. Like my father needs knee replacements. My grandfather has knee replacements, and they never bodybuilt. They never raced motocross. They never trained heavy. They just ran. They were running marathons. And my dad told me, he's like, dude, he goes, I never had knee pain when I was 35 years old. I'm like, Jesus, I've been having knee pain for the last 6 years. So like, I'm looking to have knee replacements probably in my life way earlier than my father needs them. So looking at how my knees are and the knee injuries that I incurred, I had chondromalacia in my left knee really bad. It took me like 16 months to recover from it. And it still bothers me every day. Like when I lunge and you're sitting next to me, you can hear it. So like I have to pivot down and back from the knee. I can't ever load the knee where, you know, your knee goes forward. And I'm just not interested in making my knees feel that way, because you know what it is, you suffer an injury, you feel like a turtle on your back. And potentially to keep pushing my body to the point where I'm like that permanently, that is a big no thanks. Nothing's worth than taking away your mobility permanently for life, you know?
I'm going to say one more thing, Chris, and I'll let Steve jump in. So for the younger guys like myself, I don't have any injuries, knock on wood. Is the injuries, you think it was a result of just not taking care of recovery, mobility, tissue flexibility, things like that? Or do you think it's just the result of hard, heavy training? Like you're eventually going to get injured.
Looking back, I was a total idiot. Your typical male ego moron youngster training in the gym. You know, when you're young, you think you know it all. And, I remember just ignoring pain. Like, you know, I'll do hack squats and have 8 plates on each side and I'll do that. And my knees feel uncomfortable. And the next day my knees would swell a little bit, but the following week my knees were fine again. So I'm like doing that week after week, year after year, on top of probably not being as mobile as I should be. Obviously if I did mobility work, listened to my body, I probably wouldn't be in the situation I am now. There's no question about it. I mean, I was never an ego lifter, as in like I was lifting, you know, five reps or trying to lift heavy weight. I was lifting heavy weight as I could in the 10 to 15 range, but I did ignore a lot of warning signs over the years. And I think that's finally starting to catch up with me. And then of course, genetics, there's always a genetic factor, because if both my father and grandfather have hip replacements, need knee replacements, and they didn't do any of that stuff, that's the direction I'm heading towards anyway.
What I've noticed, because I'm in my late 30s, what I've noticed over the years is same thing. When I was in my 20s, I could just be an idiot in the gym.
Yeah.
I could do like 2 rep maxes on lifts and all this stuff. But I noticed too, as you get older, your body will punish you. If you don't give your body, let your body repair, and if you try to like just push through the pain, your body just punishes you. So you're going to, one way or the other, you're going to have to take time from the gym. So you might as well just do it on your own terms, take a break. Professional athletes in any sport, they have off seasons for a reason. But for bodybuilding, it's like people just want to pound 365 days a year. And that's kind of sounds like what happened here. Your body just broke down, just like, you know, putting your car, you know, through hell and not changing the oil and not doing all this stuff. Would you agree with that? Is that something?
100%. And I think that's why people don't understand. It's like, you have to have periodization to some degree. You have to have deload. Like you said, your body wears and tears, and say, oh man, my knee's a little achy this week. It's not like next week you should go try to do the same thing again. You might want to do a rehab week, do more band work, higher reps, get more blood flow, heal it, work mobility work. Because in the end, you do that, you'll be stronger and better anyway. Then you just keep pounding away, because now you're just going to take the expiration date that was supposed to be 30 years in your joints. Now you make it 10 years.
I think what kills people in bodybuilding and powerlifting and weight training is people don't want to take a step back. They see themselves in the mirror. They see the vascularity, they see the size, and they're so freaked out about losing a half an inch on their biceps or losing a little vascularity. Cause they, you know, and then they start taking like, you know, drugs and steroids and then to try to get that more and more, and it kind of compounds the issue. And powerlifters, because I was a powerlifter and I was notorious for that, I love benching over 400 pounds, and I never wanted to be weaker than that. So I ended up tearing my rotator cuff. So my body punished me in the end.
Right.
It found a way for me to stop doing stupid shit. So it ended up punishing me. But you said something in the pre-show about how the industry is. Kind of elaborate on what you were saying, because I'm not really sure I understand.
Oh, I was saying it's like, you know, I guess it's more so today. Maybe I was naive when I first got into bodybuilding, because it wasn't social media. But like, I really feel that there's not many like-minded people as myself in this industry as I would like. Meaning, I mean, you have people who are educated and non-educated in this industry, not meaning like a college degree, but actually having the smarts to be able to comprehend, balance a little bit of life, be normal. Because I feel like a lot of people today are competing for the 110% wrong reasons. I mean, I've never seen such silly, I'm gonna rip on people, I don't care. I've never seen such silly things in my life being posted on Instagram about all these videos in the gym, training every day, what they're eating. It's like, Charles Poquin said the funniest thing ever in an interview. He goes, if you're taking a picture of egg whites and toast in the morning and you're posting it every day, he's like, you should be fined, because that's like going to the gas station and being like, hey, look, I'm putting high tests in my car. You're supposed to put gas in your car. You're supposed to put good food in your car. It's like people are trying to get credit for all these things that we do anyway, that people do and you're supposed to do. I just think it's strange. I think the whole shift with social media and the whole narcissism, obviously bodybuilding is a narcissistic sport, has like grown to a level that's almost sickening, to be honest with you. I mean, you see these people who don't do well in the show and they're ready to like legitimately like jump off a bridge. It's like, listen, relax. It's competition, man. Like, you started bodybuilding because you like lifting weights and it felt good and you loved it. So then you competed. So now if it's not about winning, you're ready to like quit everything. And I've seen so many people destroy their relationships over bodybuilding. I just think it's gotten out of control. And when I meet other people who are like more down to earth, well-rounded, have more going on in their life, I feel like there's a lot less than that in this industry than there was, or I could be completely wrong.
Steve, do you want to comment or do you want me to go?
I mean, I quit social media because of all the, like, and it's funny, there's a show on MTV about, like, called Catfish, but there's also called Catfish Troll. I don't know if you guys seen that show, but they actually track people down who talk shit on social media. And they basically go up to their place with the person and they open the door and the person is standing there who they've been talking shit on. And they, people are like sheep, you know, when they get caught like that. So I think that's part of the problem. I think it's just the whole social, you're here behind your keyboard and you're doing it. So I think it's a huge mess, but that's a really interesting perspective. But, you know, it's just, yeah, it's kind of, I'm kind of glad I didn't get sucked into the whole social media thing. But
well, this is the other thing too, right? So like, I know some people personally, and then I see their social media and they're nothing like that. Like, I can't even tell, like, this is two different people here. And then like, they're portraying to the world that this person, I'm like, wow, in real life, they're like, they're really a scumbag. Like,
they're like characters. They're playing. It's like Stephen Colbert plays a show. He's a certain character. He's like a comedian or something. And then it's like Borat. Borat plays different characters in his movies. Dude, yeah.
I don't know, man. It just,
it's bizarre.
It the whole process is foreign to me. Like, I love meeting some old timers who still compete, who have no social media. They're probably one of the most hardest working hardcore people I've ever meet. They don't need notoriety for anything. They're just there banging away, coming on stage in great condition. Love those guys, you know? And then everybody else is taking pictures of Pop-Tarts eating backstage. It's so strange, so weird. I dude, call me weird from thinking it's weird, but I don't know. I just can't handle it, you know?
A great example is we had Mark Lobliner on this podcast. And if you look at Mark Lobliner's Instagram, he gets some of the meanest comments ever. And we asked him, you know, like, has anyone in person at like an expo or anything like ever said any of those things to your comments? He's like, bro, at expos, everyone wants to shake my hand. Everyone wants a photo. Everyone's like, oh, it's so nice to meet you. I haven't had a single negative comment ever said to me in person. But if you look at his Instagram, his YouTube videos, it's people are like ripping on his wife. They're calling his wife fat. They're saying like his kids are ugly. Like they're like some of the meanest stuff ever. It's when you're behind a computer, you have that defense, right? You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but you got to think about this, though. You and I may not like somebody, but you and I wouldn't have that low-class mentality to spend our day trying to rip apart somebody else on social media. I mean, sorry, but you're a loser. Because let's be honest, there's people I don't like, and I know they're scumbags to the core, but I'm not going to waste my time, my life, posting comments on their Instagram page. I think that's the strangest thing. It's like, get on with your life, better your life, spend time with your family, be productive instead of spending so much time being negative to others, somebody else. Like, people don't realize that the more someone does that and you're doing that, you're just showing the world how much of a loser and insecure you are. That's flat out fact, you know?
I started in the industry pretty young. I wrote my first article when I was 18. And it was grocery shopping for athletes. So it's pretty simple. Like I really made it, you know, just like for the average person. So I talked about, you know, like the best protein sources, the best carb sources, all that sorts of things. It was just really simple stuff. It was like, instead of purchasing white bread, you know, whole grains are better. Like it was very, very simple. It's like, instead of fruit juice, whole fruit is a better option. Instead of chicken fingers, you get chicken breast. So I wrote that article. It got published. There's maybe like 30 positive comments like, hey, this is great. Like, I'm going to print this off. I'm going to share this with my kids. There was like one negative comment. It wasn't even something really bad. And I remember I was really, really upset. And I talked to the publisher. I'm like, do you think we should take this article down? Like, look, this one guy says something negative. He's like, dude, for every one negative comment, there's 1,000 people you helped who are too busy with their lives to post anything.
100%. Yeah. It was funny. I was having a conversation with Sean Claridia the other day. And he said he receives so much hate mail every day, most horrible things. And I'm like, that's just crazy that people will spend their time out of the day to do that. Crazy.
Speaking of social media, I had no idea how popular you were. I posted a photo of, you know, you saying you're coming on the show tonight. I'm not even exaggerating, dude. I've probably got close to 100 DMs with questions. And they were all like legit questions. Like there was like a couple, there's maybe like 10 weirdos asking your shoe size. But I mean, like the other 90 were like legit.
That's surprising, man. I mean, like, you know, I feel like I'm just like everybody else. I don't feel special. I just try to, you make your impact, help people and do what you can. You know, I'm glad that people are taking interest and want to learn some good stuff, you know?
So the first question comes from Peter Hill. He wants to know about steroids in professional sports. He asked specifically about Mike Tyson and boxing. He said, you know, all these MMA guys, they're getting tested. You know, the Olympics get tested. He wants to know, in your opinion, do you think that testing is kind of just for show, or do you think these guys are actually natural?
That's a very good question. I really can't comment because I'm one of those people that if I really don't know, I can't comment on fact. I can put my opinion in theory. I really probably do think there are drug tested, but I really think there's obviously ways around any drug tests. Obviously there's drugs that leave your system within 24 hours, unless you're getting drug tested throughout the whole few weeks prior to the event. And, you know, it's a third party testing, of course. But I mean, I've heard of people in NFL and even in college where they get a heads up ahead of time on who's going to be drug tested, and, or when the drug test is coming, and then people will like sell urine. And it just, I mean, there's always a way around every test. I really do think they do a great job, or they try to do the best job they can on making it as drug-free as possible. But I mean, it's impossible to make it 100% drug-free for everybody because there are people that slip through the cracks. There's no question about it.
I'll say something, I'll like go with Steve-O. Again, I don't know. Like, obviously I'm not a professional boxer or anything like that. But if you think about it, these organizations, they're businesses, right? The NFL wants as many views as possible because the more views, the more ads they can sell, right? So as an organization, they want the best athletes possible because the crazier the athletes, the crazier the touchdowns, the bigger the tackles, the more people are going to watch. So if you think about what would be in the best interest of these organizations, they want the athletes using drugs because that's going to make them the best athletes possible, but they don't want people to think they're using drugs. So I agree with you. And again, I don't know this firsthand because again, I've never been a professional wrestler. I've never been in the NFL, but it would make sense that they would do drug tests, but it would kind of just be for show, and they would do everything in their power to make the athletes who are using drugs still pass the test.
Yeah, I could easily see that happening. There's no question about it. I mean, didn't baseball ticket sales go through the roof when Mark McGwire got tested positive? Didn't everybody want to come out and see jacked up baseball players hit home runs? I mean, I would believe it. I wouldn't put it past it. But like you said, I don't know. We're only theorizing. But I mean, it's clearly possible. I mean, like this, like the whole Lance Armstrong scandal. Didn't they have Lance Armstrong's sample like 2 years prior, and then they tested it way after, right?
I don't know much about the Tour de France, but I'm pretty sure in the Tour de France, like, there's teams of cyclists, right? So like Lance Armstrong was just like the cyclist who ended. Cause like, I'm pretty sure how it works is like you have 12 cyclists and one cyclist bikes for like a certain amount of days and the next one goes. And I'm pretty sure all of the cyclists tested positive, but the only one that they actually like the media talked about was Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
So here's one, Chris, you being a dietitian, you have a master's in dietitian, right?
Master's in human nutrition. That's what
human nutrition. Called. So here's a question for you. I saw a report like a couple weeks ago that 50% of Americans are at least 30% body fat. Is that accurate?
You know, what's funny
is that,
I just posted something the other day on the World Health Organization speculating if the rise in obesity continues in the world, in the United States, I think something like 2/3 of the United States will be considered overweight. Not obese, overweight. And then, man, I can't say statistics on that thing, but it was something like 3 out of 8 people have type 2 diabetes. So America, despite everything and all efforts made by companies putting calories on things, coaches out the yin-yang, industry, companies making breaks on healthcare costs, if you make a certain BMI, low blood pressure, low cholesterol, our country, U.S. is still getting fatter and fatter. And
so diabetes, we are getting fatter. It hasn't in the past few years started reversing. It's getting worse.
Nope.
Okay. So here's my question to you. In the past 20 or 30 years, we keep hearing the same thing: exercise more and eat less. And
well, that's actually happened. Statistically shown that Americans are exercising more than ever, but body weight is still increasing.
Yeah, that's actually what I brought up the last few podcasts, because I've been reading a lot about this type of stuff. And that's the thing people always say, oh, Americans are lazy. And I tell people, actually, Americans work out more than any other country. We're crazy about sports. You know, we're obsessed about sports. We're always, you know, exercising. We have more gyms than any other country. So what do you think is causing this to spiral out of control? Type 2 diabetes, being overweight, obesity. Why do we keep getting fatter, even though
it's very simple. You ready? It's lack of self-responsibility. Americans have no self-responsibility. We live in a country now where kids go home and tell their parents they got a detention, and the parents march down the school with a lawyer and go, how dare you discipline my kid? My kid didn't do that. There's this huge push in the society in our country where you walk into UPS and they do you wrong, they have to give you free stuff. It's like, even though you're the asshole, it's like everybody's trying to protect their business, so they bend over backwards for asshole customers. People have zero self-responsibility. I mean, geez, we have people in this country suing fast food restaurants at one point because it made them overweight. They're saying that, oh, McDonald's doesn't have healthier choices. That's the problem. So McDonald's makes healthier choices and nobody buys them. So McDonald's pulls off the shelf. There's no self-responsibility anymore. And you have this push where a fine line where people draw the line where it goes, you have to accept your body image. Yeah, I agree. However, if you're incredibly overweight and it's detrimental to your health and you're hurting yourself, that's not okay. It's not. I mean, you know, we have plus size models up on billboards and things like that, which is fine. But like, there's a fine line drawing between like, it's okay to be overweight and it's okay to be unhealthy, because obviously there's overweight people who are not unhealthy.
So let's take someone who does want to take personal responsibility and they are overweight and they're trying to lose weight. Isn't the problem that people think doing X is the way to lose weight, but really that's not the way to lose weight? And we've been told bullshit for the past 20 years. Like, for example, we've been told you need to cut down your calories when a diet soda has zero calories. So people are like, yeah, let me go buy diet soda because I'm going to lose weight drinking diet soda. But, you know, diet soda doesn't lead to weight loss. Diet soda still spikes insulin and still tricks the mind into thinking there's sugar. So it's like, isn't it not to blame the victim? Isn't it not the victim's fault on this? Isn't it the food companies and the advertising and Michael Jordan on TV eating a Big Mac and saying that's what he eats? Aren't we being tricked? Well,
I don't know. I was brought up that, like, you know, when if you play the victim, your victimology, you falling behind in life, you're never going to be successful. So you really have to educate yourself and learn to take care of yourself. Nobody's going to take care of yourself for you. It's just not how we can't rely on government to like hold our hand through everything. So back to what I was saying is, I take that back. There's three reasons why America keeps being overweight. Like you just said, marketing, where you have a lot of companies marketing false claims. You have people, even personal trainers and coaches, posting false claims about 30 pounds of weight loss in 30 days, instant fix. And then you have Americans typically want what they want tomorrow, today. You know, it just like the instant gratification doesn't work with weight loss. Obviously, we don't gain 40 pounds of body fat in 40 days. We're not losing 40 pounds of body fat in 40 days. So there's that aspect too, but I agree with you in the direction of, you know, you have a lot of companies tricking consumers like
Subway.
Yeah, fat-free spray. This is healthy, this is not. But at the same token though, you have endless information at our fingertips like ever before. There's more resources than ever out there. I think what a lot of people do, is I've seen this, is well, people will search for the diet or the person that tells them what they want to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, Subway, they say, is healthy, so I'm going to eat the meatball grinder. No, they didn't say the meatball grinder at Subway was healthy. There's obviously healthier choices you can choose at Subway. So, I mean, I help a lot of people lose weight. I have a lot, most of my clientele are general weight loss, and I hear it from some of them, and I see the mentality, or I see, like, you know, people, you know, Dr. Oz or magazines selling these little quick tidbits which kind of paint a black and white picture of how you're supposed to eat nutritionally, which kind of distorts the public's view of what's eating correctly or not.
The problem is, though, Chris, if you go to a doctor and you have type 2 diabetes, the doctor will actually tell you that cereal, Cheerios, all this stuff is okay to eat because, you know, whatever. I don't know. I don't eat cereal. So I'm assuming because it doesn't have much sugar in it. I'm not really sure. But I mean, the glycemic load of Cheerios is higher than eating bread. But like, isn't, if the doctors can't even get this shit right and are telling people to eat Cheerios and to not eat a little bit of watermelon or some berries or something, isn't that the problem? Isn't our medical industry leading people the wrong way? These people, go to a doctor with type 2 diabetes and the doctor will throw them on metformin and throw them on insulin and throw them all this stuff. They're not going to tell them, hey, you need to eat this and this and this. Isn't that? That's what I'm trying to say, because you're a dietitian.
Well, I'll tell you this. I agree with you. And there's obviously there's like this argument you can make where doctors really don't have knowledge of nutrition. They just don't. In retrospect to like, you know, a nutrition professional, they just don't. I worked in the hospital. My father's a physician. My dad tells me all the time. He goes, he goes to medical school and even our continuing education to renew their, you know, medical license. He goes, nutrition portion is so small. And not to mention the reimbursement where adherence to nutrition plans is so low. When I worked at the hospital and we gave diabetes education, nutrition programs, handouts, everything, you'd see the same people come back at the door over and over again. They're half of them people that I can't even follow their med protocol, let alone learn how to cook healthy and eat healthy and be accountable to themselves, because they just don't. There's like not incentive. My father told me once, he had a patient come into him and he goes, Doc, I gotta lose weight and I gotta get my cholesterol down. My dad's like, why? I've been trying to get you to lose cholesterol and lose weight for the last 30 years as a patient. And he goes, well, at my work, they're starting to charge more money per month out of my paycheck because I don't fit that protocol for their insurance plan. And I'm like, so money's motivating you now, not me telling you that you're going to die early.
Chris, you go to church?
What's that?
You go to church?
No. My parents are all into that. I kind of fell away from that stuff.
Okay, this was the message at church on Sunday. Don't wait until failure to make a change. And after hearing that, I was like, holy smokes, how true is that about our current society? Buddy has a heart attack. He finally makes the diet change his body's been begging him to make for 5 years, right? Someone gets slammed with divorce papers. They finally then read a book on marriage advice, right? Their kids won't talk to them anymore. They finally go and buy a book on parenting, right? Like, I don't know what it is about our society. It's only once someone has hit absolute rock bottom and failed that they're like, okay, now I should make a change.
I agree. I don't know if that's just human nature in itself to always think about, you know, so being short-sighted, thinking that nothing's going to happen to them. When bad things happen to some people and they're like, I'm like, dude, are you really shocked that you had a heart attack? I'm like, you smoke 2 pack cigarettes a day, you're 100 pounds overweight, and you use steroids. Like, I don't know how you didn't think this was coming. You know, this is not a shocker. Like, we thought it was going to happen 2 years ago, you know? I don't know. I think people they're in kind of like a denial, you know?
We all think we're invincible. So going back to the listener questions, through a lot of them, Sister012 asks, what is your opinion about insulin? Is it necessary for competing at bodybuilding in a professional level?
I really don't think so. I mean, I've used it very seldomly. I know some pros who are in the open who don't use it at all. I think it's one of those things that hits the internet on forums. And now that it's on the forums, it must be factual. And then everybody has to use it. And then doses become crazy. I mean, I've had a couple people reach out to me about from other coaches having them use like 80 units a day, all this crazy amount of Lantus and Humulin R and Humalog, and I'm like, and they're nearly 185 pounds. I mean, it can't be working that well. I just think that people are relying too much on drugs, too much on insulin, and too much of all of it, and not really enough on just the being consistent day-to-day hard training nutrition. Because let's be honest, you can take all the drugs you want in the world. If you're not consistent with nutrition training or know what you're doing in the gym, you're not going to grow. And if you have terrible genetics, you can just forget it.
How often do you see this? Buddy buys some insulin thinking, you know, it's a secret. He buys some Humulin R or whatever. He ups his carbs, you know, from 200 grams per day to 400 grams per day with the insulin, thinking like now he's got the secret. And all that happens is he just gets fat.
All the time. Honestly, I would say if I was going to quantify it, of all people I know who use insulin, say just to be safe, personally, I've known, say, I named 20 people. I would say two of those 20 actually benefited from it. They're generally very fast metabolism, very skinnier guys, and eating more and more food and shuttling the insulin faster did make them gain weight, look fuller and rounder. But then again, they discontinued insulin, they lose half of that weight. All the water tension just kind of goes right away. But like most people, I don't know where it is. Like you get some people who are already kind of chubby and they're like, I got to use this insulinless growth and it's going to get me huge. I'm like, no, it's just going to get you really fat, fast.
So our next user question comes from my good buddy E32. He's a really big fan of the show. He actually complimented you. He said, this dude is a beast. Holy cow. Because we posted your picture on the forum. He wants to know, there's been a lot of talk about keto. And he wants to know, do you think that keto works? Is it a fad? And do you think, well, he said, why is it exploding? What changed? Who really was the precursor to start pushing it? And he wants to know your recommendation on how long to stay on the keto diet, or is it even worth it?
All right. Well, just trouble back up on this too, that, you know, there's a difference between bodybuilding style keto and actual real keto. Real keto is like 70, 75%. Fat calories. Am I correct, Trevor? Right?
Real keto is 70 to 80% fat.
Yeah.
About 20% protein and only 5% carbs. So right. That whole Dave Lombo keto diet, that's not really a legitimate keto diet. It's a very high fat, high protein, low carb diet. But to run an actual ketogenic diet, you need your fat calories at roughly 70%.
Correct. So we'll talk about this keto diet in retrospect. What he's referring to is more of a no carb diet, high fat, high protein. Do I think it's effective in losing body fat? Yes, provided that you have some sort of glycogen refeed, carb meal, high day, seldomly every 7 to 10 days to ensure glycogen's kind of gets replenished at some point to keep fat loss going. It's it's incredibly easy to follow. I mean, taking out all your carbs and focusing on higher fats and protein is incredibly easy to follow a plan. For building muscle, I really don't think it's the best way to go about it at all. I think it almost could be counterproductive if you're trying to build muscle and gain weight. For prep, I really don't like doing it with people unless I absolutely have to. I still feel that carbohydrate do have to be brought in at some point because, you know, if you're training, say, very high intensity, short rest between sets, like I really feel that carbohydrates need to be in the diet, that style of training. If you're powerlifting or, you know, it was true strength training where you're waiting good rest between sets, 6 to 8 reps, not as intense, fast paced, I think possibly could work. Then again, you get some people who might benefit from really well and some people don't. And just in my experience, in my opinion, I don't think across the board, it's the best way to diet somebody.
So let's say, because most of our listeners aren't competitors, let's say the average Joe out there who's between 15 and 20% body fat, who's a gym rat, and they want to cut down between to like 10 to 15% or 10 to 12%, what would be a diet out there that they could kind of follow, like one of these fad diets or anything? What kind of macros or anything, what you could tell them?
Oh, that's such a hard thing to ask because everybody's so different. I mean, if I was going to make some sort of broad statement across the board, I would say, you know, going as low, if you're a male, if you're going as low as 100 carbs per day, providing a caloric deficit, I wouldn't go any lower than that. And most of those carbs be from like fruits or nutrient-dense foods like sweet potatoes. And then you could possibly even go to 50 carbs, but then maybe one day a week, bring your carbs up to like 200 or 300, or have a specific refeed where you're bringing your glycogen back in. But I mean, a no carb, higher protein, high fat diet is a good way to kick off a weight loss. If you're a general weight loss, trying to lose some weight quickly, and then eventually reintroduce some fruits, some sweet potatoes back into the diet to keep some sort of carbohydrates and fiber in there. That would be reasonable. It's a really hard statement, a broad statement to make because it's kind of like telling somebody how to tactically ambush somebody. I mean, it's a different situation for everybody.
The biggest issue I have with keto, and I just know this because I've had close to 100 people email me in this exact situation, is they follow a keto diet, and on the keto diet, they view carbohydrates as the devil, right? So they're doing this keto diet. It's working great, but saying you're never going to eat a carb again is obviously not realistic.
Nope.
So what happens is they're doing this keto diet. They do it for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then they're out for a birthday party or something like that, and they finally eat a carb. And then this, oh, fuck it approach goes off in their head where they're like, well, I just ate half a cup of rice. I might as well go eat the entire loaf of bread and the entire, you know, tray of garlic toast and then go have some ice cream and things like that. So what I don't like about the keto diet is that it demonizes carbs, right? So like, if you want to lose weight, should you lower your carbs? Yes, absolutely. But do you need to cut them out completely? No. Like that's like way too extreme of an approach. And one of the problems we have as a society is that we view things as good or bad. It's either black and white. It's not, yeah, you should reduce your carbs, but you don't have to eliminate them completely. It's no, carbs are the devil, no carbs, keto.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing with people, because people are like, I heard coconut oil is good, it hurts bad. What is it? I'm like, well, it's neither good or bad. There's a place for it in circumstances, just like red meat. So I like you said, people like blanket statements because it's easier to remember that's bad, this is good, and they can hand it. They don't understand that there's like there's a strategy, there's a method behind it, you know?
I love how, you know, Dr. Oz will do like an episode on like chia seeds. And then people will be like, wow, chia seeds are like the greatest thing ever. Like I need to start eating chia seeds in every meal. It's like, no, like chia seeds are a good food, but I mean, there's lots of nutrient-dense foods. Or exactly, someone will do an episode on like coconut oil. It's like, hey, Trev, what's coconut oil? Like, I think I should start eating this at every meal. I'm like, well, it's a good fat source, but so are avocados and extra virgin olive oil and almonds. Like, the best would be a variety. But it's almost like people hear about this one specific supplement or food or whatever, and then all of a sudden it's this, like, miracle food.
So Chris, on that note, what are some foods that people are eating that they really shouldn't be eating? Like, what are some examples in terms of for people go ahead.
Food products. People need to spend more time making food instead of food products. Everybody's looking for something that's fast. The bottom line is there's no fast way to get good results. There's no such thing. There's no fast way to get rich. There's no fast way to build a house. Like there's the right way. So like, I think a lot of people, especially vegans now, you know, nothing against veganism. I don't agree with it, but like, they tend to eat a lot more food products, bars, vegan packaged, prepackaged foods that generally end up being higher in sodium, not very micronutrient dense. They become more deficient in things, get GI upset, bloating, gas. So like, you know, I think food products are really the enemy for a lot of people. I think people spend too much time trying to how to cut corners and how to make things fast when there's no way. If you're into healthy eating, you're into athleticism, you're into training, sports, or being healthy, like you got to spend time making the food.
So give us an example, Chris, give us an example of what you and your wife are having for dinner tonight so people can kind of get a sense of what you mean.
Well, every night for dinner, my wife and I eat eggs. I mean, we do 2 whole eggs. We'll do some egg whites, spinach, mushrooms. We'll make like a scramble. I'll put 1 ounce of aged cheddar cheese. And then I'll usually let my wife and I will split an orange and like 200 grams of strawberries. That's not typical dinner for most people. The last meal we both just ate, we had bison, sweet potato. I had a lettuce, a sliced tomato, and a few strawberries. So like I eat really healthy and I eat a variety of foods, but I mean like you gotta make things and you gotta investigate what you like. A lot of people like to jump on like recipes and get ideas and programs, but you got to dive into healthy eating and learn to find what you like to do, what you like to make, and what's relatively efficient to make. Because I don't spend that much time making food and cooking food. I just know what I want to eat. I know how to make it quickly, and I make it. It doesn't take that much time. I think a lot of people, the biggest deficit of people is they don't know what direction to go to. But you just have to go into a direction and kind of find your niche. Because over time, like you and I, all of us all have a meal that we love that we tend to migrate to that's healthy, that's balanced. And we might repeat that meal a few times or make variations of that meal. Like last night we had salmon. I had salmon and I had a salad, tomatoes, cucumbers, and carrots. So you change up every once in a while things you like to eat. But I had a lot of people always be like, oh, I'm going to do breakfast and I'll do 4 shakes and then I'll do dinner. I'm like, I never had a job in my life in the last 15 years where I wasn't able to make a meal or bring a meal with me or hide it somewhere and get it in 5 minutes. I've had multiple jobs, internships, worked in the ICU. I figured it out. You just got to figure it out and then have the will to carry it out.
So next question is from Jay Guy. This is a business question. For podcast with Chris Tuttle, could you guys cover how he approaches managing his business, building clientele, peak week for competitors? Thanks. Excited to listen.
All right. So the first question was managing business.
It's basically like, how do you manage your business? How do you balance, you know, managing your business, getting new competitors, but then working with, you know, like the peak week of current competitors, things like that. Like, how do you balance everything?
I don't think about balance. I just work harder. So for example, my day starts at 4:45 a.m. My day ends at 2:30 p.m. Monday through Sunday. I live on the same schedule of sleep. The only day that I don't work is Sunday, but I will answer competitors on Sunday. So in retrospect to like handling people, like I'm a resource. When they purchase, they have this resource at their fingertips as much as they want to use me. So people email me, I answer emails that day fast. I get back to their information. As far as balance, I would say my wife and I, we really don't have balance in our business because we work a disturbing amount of hours. I just do what it takes to help the individual reach where they want to reach. And, you know, obviously you can lead the horse to water, you can't make it drink, but I'm here, I'm there to push them, I'm here to be a resource to allow them to achieve that. Peak week is very stressful for me because I care. Some coaches don't care. They just want the money and then they put their effort into their best looking clients. But for example, I had 17 people competing in 2 different shows on one day in June. And that was really stressful. I was up at 4 in the morning and I was going to bed at midnight, making sure I looked at their pictures and got their information back. And it was incredibly difficult, incredibly stressful. I mean, it paid off. I mean, we won 8 classes in one show and 3 overalls in one show. So it worked, it's stressful, but I mean, it's on the competitor that they have to check in on time. They have to get me the information that I need. I need information. And luckily everybody was really good about that. But it's really, I just do whatever it takes for them to get what they need to be. I mean, I'm not gonna take somebody's money and then be like, hey, I'll answer you on Tuesday. I just do whatever I can, man.
The guy who asked this question, just by his question, it kind of seemed like he's a new guy. He's looking into getting into coaching. My advice for him is if you want a Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 type of job, don't become a prep coach.
Yeah, nope. 100% agree. And just to end that on that note, it's like, you know, I try to make my hours, you know, end at 8 p.m. at night, but it never works out that way because people get home from work, they get late. I have to get their information to them. My day starts right when I get up. I'll answer as many emails as I can before I go to the gym. Then I come right back from the gym and I'm on the computer all day long again. I have to schedule walks to make sure I move about during the day because you're on the computer. But you're 100% right. Like, you disappear for 3 days on vacation, you come back and there's 3 times the amount of work. There's nobody covering for you, you know?
I'm the exact same way, man. But the thing is both me and you, we enjoy it. It doesn't really feel like work.
Correct, correct. I mean, a day goes by in 2 seconds, you know?
Oh, it's between the WhatsApp messages, the Instagram DMs, the Facebook messages, the email. It's, oh yeah, I hear you. So our next question is from Linda Steffen. What's your approach when you have a client who's overtraining, eating less than what's on the meal plan, and can't drop body weight and has a totally negative mindset? Her body is fighting back. I want to help her, but I'm at a loss.
Yeah, that's a lot. I would say that's a good large percent of females, especially who compete, who are post-show, it sounds like, because they've kind of made their metabolism a little more resistant to change. The body's more in a little survival mode. And, you know, the answer of losing body fat is not to do more exercise and eat less. It's not going to work. You really have to be frank with them. I mean, the bottom line is I try to tell my clients that have that problem. I go, listen, clearly you've been doing this for the last 3 months and it's not working. So continuously doing it is still not going to work. That's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing, thinking different result. So you have to start an approach. And usually they don't want to back off exercise. and sometimes they don't want to eat more food. So I'll kind of feel them out to see which they rather do. I mean, ideal world, I'd back off their volume and increase their calories slowly. But I had a recent client individual who did not want to do that. So what I did was I kept their exercise the same and I increased their caloric intake. That way it was only one change at a time. And I just gave them a little bit more food so they don't freak out, because, you know, when you get a girl who is not eating carbs, they get carbs and their stomach feels full, they think they're getting fat because the body, they're not used to having carbs in their stomach and fiber, so they feel distended. Not to mention they probably have weak motility because of no carbs and no fiber. So usually I'll start with whatever they feel comfortable with changing first, but there has to be a change and there has to be a positive outlook or they're going to be spinning the same wheels. I mean, you know how it is. It's like if you have somebody who's got a horrible outlook, they're incredibly stressed and anxiety, they got the best plan, coach, diet plan, training in the world, they're not really going to respond. It's a multifaceted issue, but you just have to be flat out frank with them and let them kind of see that what they're doing is not working. They've been doing it, so there's only all the alternate choices to try another path.
Yeah, that's a really, really good answer. Steve, you got anything to add?
So we have another user question. This one's kind of off the wall a little bit, but he wants to know, he says he's a truck driver. He's always on the road, traveling coast to coast. And he says that a lot of times his only options are eating out, obviously. So he wants to know what can he do? Is there any recommendations for someone who has his type of lifestyle? And from my, you know, experience with this, God, it's going to be hard to pull this off, but I think it can be done if you're smart about it. Do you have any tips for this guy?
Yeah, it can be done if you want to do it. The bottom line of what makes it horrible is you're eating out and spending a decent amount of food money on a meal that you're not generally going to enjoy. That's the problem. Like if you're going to go to Wendy's and you're like, oh, I got to make a good choice. You could be like, oh, can I do the baked potato, please? Chili on the side. And can I do grilled chicken sandwich? And you take grilled chicken out of the sandwich. But not many people are going to want to spend $12 and eat that. That becomes more of the issue. You can easily eat healthy on the road. I've done it many times before. It's just if you want to or not. There's plenty of options now where you can try to, I mean, I could find something decent to eat almost anywhere within reason. I mean, every breakfast place cooks egg whites. Every breakfast place you can get toast dry. Every breakfast place in Dunkin' Donuts now, I mean, has fresh fruit you can buy. They have those egg white flatbread things. There's are choices that are available. There are there. It's whether you like them, want to eat them, or spend the money on getting them. I guess more or less you got to find is your truck route, what's available on those truck routes, and what you like, and kind of match and find a decent meal that you can kind of put together at those places, because you can really do it almost anywhere, except in a Italian restaurant. I find it almost impossible.
What I would recommend for this guy is pack non-perishable foods, you know, pack tuna cans, salmon cans, yep, almonds, vegetables that don't require refrigeration, you know, carrot sticks, celery sticks, things like that. Like you gotta get a little bit creative. And I mean, eating salmon out of the can with some, you know, carrot sticks and some almonds, it might not be the most delicious meal in the world, but it's kind of like, what do you care more about, reaching your nutrient goals or flavor?
And they have those tuna packets, those tuna sensation packets, where it's like oatmeal and a little bit of olive oil, and it has like an Italian seasoning in it, so you can eat the tuna right out of the packet, and it has like the healthy fat, the tuna, and a flavoring already in it. And you can put that on like a whole wheat cracker or something. So there's definitely options, like Trevor just said.
So our last question, we've got a couple questions. I'm going to sum them all up into the same one, is that being a successful IFBB pro, knowing what it takes to win a pro card, to compete at the professional level, do you think this is something you can do while having a job, having a family, having kids? Or do you really think that the selfish nature of this sport requires you to live, you know, it wouldn't really allow you to have all those other family and father aspects to it?
This is my answer easily. If you have good genetics and you already have mass and, like, you know, your size is good and you just want to compete, you can do a lot, have a family and do everything and compete and still manage that. You can. Now, if you're trying to be the best that you could possibly ever be, can you have all of that? No. Are there some people that can pull it off, yeah, sure, but very, very few. I have clients who have four kids under the age of four, work full time, and they still compete and train twice a day. But like, is it the best he could possibly be? No, but he still does well and he can do it. If you really want to do it, you can. Looking back at me competing, I did the best when I had the most on my plate because, you know, when you're dieting for a show, you're prepping for a show, you're hungry. So I like to be distracted. So I used to do all my assignments like a month ahead of time in college. So they would be all be done. I'd have all my papers already written, ready to be passed in way ahead of time because I just like to be go, 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 be productive, productive, productive. But when it really comes down to, if it's affecting your sleep and you're getting, you're high stressed, getting terrible sleep and horrible anxiety, then no. But if you have, if you're a person that generally goes through the flow and you can manage stress really well psychologically, then yes, you can do it.
Chris, for our listeners, where can they get a hold of you? Where can they learn more about your coaching services?
You can visit my website, TuttleNutrition.com, and you can contact me directly through there.
What's really cool is both you and your wife are nutritionists. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm a dietitian. She has a certification, but I'm a dietitian and a master's in nutrition. But we both work from home. We both have our own clients. She has her separate clients from me.
Okay, that's really cool. And then you guys just started a YouTube channel as well, right?
We made a bunch of videos. We just haven't had time for it. We kind of made videos that are more conducive for our clients specifically because everybody always goes, oh my gosh, my chicken's so dry. And I'm like, God, they got to be cooking chicken like in a Foreman or in the microwave or something or baking it. So I made a video on like my tips on cooking chicken to make it taste as, you know, less dry as possible and what seasonings to make and how I do it to help them and know how to prepare food because, you know, to you and I, preparing and prepping food might be something that's easy to think about and easy to put together, but the general public, some people don't realize how easy it is and they need that knowledge. So I made some basic videos just for people to reference for good information.
Have you ever tried putting chicken in the slow cooker?
No, I do not have one. We just got an air fryer recently.
Oh, how do you like it? I was thinking about buying one.
Air fryer is unbelievable for sweet potatoes, vegetables. Cooks it perfectly, tastes great, doesn't take very long. We've yet to make any crazy recipes or chicken in it yet. But a couple of my clients cook chicken in it and they say it's great, but I have not done it yet. I'm a grill guy. I like to grill my chicken.
The only problem with grilling is that we have 8 months of winter here in Canada. So it's pretty hard to grill minus 40.
Yeah, that's not fun. Been there before in the winter cooking grill, seeing my neighbor look at me like, is this dude really grilling food in a snowstorm?
One of my neighbors, he grills year round and he has an apron that says, you can judge a man by the severity of temperatures he's willing to grill in. And literally in January, it'll be like minus 30. And you see him out there with his boots. He's got like his ski mask on and everything. And he's out there grilling on the barbecue.
I would love to have that apron. That's a great apron. That's good.
I'm sure if you Googled it, you could find one on Amazon for like $30.
Yeah, some of that stuff is great, man. I like some of the things that people have on their shirt. It's fantastic.
Okay. I will say one thing before we close off the show. If any of our listeners have a first date coming up and you want a way to guarantee a first kiss, cook her dinner and wear a Kiss the Cook apron. It works every single time.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, that's a great idea. I mean, how many people actually will spend the time making a nice meal for the first date? I honestly probably can't think of one person that I know who ever done that. That's a good idea.
Women love a man who can cook. For your host, Trevor Crittenden, for my co-host, Steve Smee, and for our special guest, IFBB Pro, Chris Tuttle, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening.
All right, guys.
Mm-hmm.